Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Botched that spell where you wanted everyone to forget the Peter Parker Spider-Man. We started getting some visitors. From every universe. Hello, Peter. Peter Parker.
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Dr. Otto Octavius.
Wait, no, seriously, what's your actual name?
There are others out there. We need to send them back. So,
Scooby-Doo this crap.
You know, all this is kind of your mess. I know a couple of magic words myself, starting with the word please.
Please, Scooby-Doo this crap.
Hello, and welcome to Fan Critical and our spoiler-filled review of Spider-Man No Way Home. Yeah?
Ooh.
Yeah. Very highly anticipated film, and look, so highly anticipated that John really wanted to be here. But sadly, he was sucked into the multiverse, yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. And the one we got sent back was way too happy. It just didn't work. You know,
he has been weirdly happy, hasn't he? Just on the in the chat.
So I'm kind of thinking that maybe, you know, our multiverse version of John just isn't going to work for this podcast. He has a very specific role, a character, if you will, who is he's a grumpy. We can't have him being happy about things.
No.
So instead, I've roped Mr. Neutral Gareth into this podcast instead. Hello, Gareth.
Yes, hello. I can try to turn up my cynicism a touch or two, if you want, for this pod.
I'm sure you will.
Fucking shit, innit?
Fucking rubbish. Okay, so, rubbish. Marvel, I'm sick of it. I've said it in the last 5 podcasts, Len. I'm sick. I'm Marveled out. I don't want to see any more Marvel.
Is that an impression of me? You've gone to a bizarre multiverse to find that version of me, mate.
Yeah, that's
insane.
Little dweeb-like character that I've just envisaged as you. Anyway, okay. Enough of that banter, if you will. What we're going to do...
Great start.
What we're going to do, first of all, is have a spoiler-free score review, okay? Because I figure there's going to be a lot of people who are like, well, I'm not going to go see this film unless Len and Gaz give it maximum score, maximum reviews. Because
maximum review.
Maximum. Because, I respect their opinions and I know they're going to give us this spoiler-free discussion at the start before they dive into it. So they're not going to spoil anything for me. So
who's saying that?
Loads of people, mate. I got emails, so many of them. Don't even want to get into them right now, but loads, okay? So this is the way it's going to work.
Show me that email account.
Nah,
day,
don't worry,
please.
About it. Don't worry about it. Anyway, Rotten Tomatoes has this to say about Spider-Man No Way Home.
Is it 100% on Rotten Tomatoes?
It's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. So make of that what you will. Yes, so it's actually got a score of 94%, and that's a critic score. It's got an audience score of 99%. That's ludicrous, because usually you got all the hate. You know, these days things get review bombed all the time. So it's very rare to get that sort of score anymore.
I'm not a mathematician, but I do know that 99% is one of the better percentages you can get.
100%, 99% is one of the better ones you can get. So,
Good.
They said this: a bigger, bolder Spider-Man sequel, No Way Home expands the franchise's scope and stakes without losing sight of its humor and heart. Also, I just want to say that this film, as of today, has grossed $854 million in its opening week, which is by far the biggest numbers since the pandemic began, and is kind of basically where you would expect it to be if there was no pandemic. You know, $1 billion in opening week, you know, it can happen, and it has happened with things like Endgame, Star Wars. So this, even I think one of the Jurassic World films, which surprisingly is always near the top, people love those dinosaurs, what can you say? So this is like cinema hitting back, because there's been a lot of talk about how on-demand streaming and releasing these films on like Disney Plus or HBO Max is the way forward in the future. So this is a big...
We still want the cinema experience. People want to go with their families or their friends, and they want to buy giant things of popcorn and put crispy M&Ms in it, and, you know, buy the limited edition cup holder.
Who wouldn't want to do that?
People want that. People want that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mostly you.
Mostly me. And my son, when he grows up, I will force him to do all those things, or I'll just buy them and then say they're his, so people don't judge me when I'm 40 years old, you know?
Yeah.
You bought, that's sweet. Sure. You bought your kid that limited edition Kylo Ren cup. Yep, definitely bought it for him.
No, it's mine.
Thanks, Daddy. Get off.
Interesting how they're all decorating your study, aren't they? None of them have made it to his bedroom or his playroom.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so those numbers I've just mentioned obviously place this statistically and arguably as one of the best Marvel movies ever made. But most importantly, it doesn't matter about those numbers, because Gareth is going to tell you what he thinks, and apparently he's better than Rotten Tomatoes and a lot of other people. So here he is. Gareth, can I have your spoiler-free thoughts on Spider-Man No Way Home, as well as the patented blueberry score? And if you want to give it maximum blueberries, you can, but you have to say maximum reviews, semicolon, blueberries. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Well, thanks for giving me permission.
Yep.
Sorry. To use my system that I invented as I want to. But yeah, you know, you're right. I am better than Rotten Tomatoes. And so therefore, this is going to be more official. People won't be referring to the Rotten Tomatoes score. They will be referring to this, which is...
vis-a-vis the following.
Henceforth.
Yeah.
I really had a lovely time going to the cinema to see this.
Lovely time.
You know, let's set the scene a little bit, Len. You know, you and I have a little bit of a Christmas tradition of going on a relatively late shop for our...
balls to the wall shopping trip. You just got to get it done.
And to be fair, we were pretty organised this year. Like, I'm impressed with how quickly we got this done.
And a week before Christmas... I'll let you know.
A whole week. I've got a week to do my wrapping. It's unreal. I feel like I've fallen into some sort of alternate universe.
Yeah, exactly.
So, look, we were there on like a bit of a Christmas high. We finished super early, which meant we had time to go and have a little drink as well. So we went and had a drink, watched a bit of terrible cricket happening. But it's safe to say, you know, we were going to the cinema in high spirits, and I was going to the cinema in high spirits, and that's despite the fact that I have been suffering from Marvel fatigue for quite some time.
Yes,
yeah, that's been well documented.
Very well documented.
I was looking forward to this film, probably influenced by you, to be honest. The hype man himself. Now, obviously, this is a spoiler-free segment of the podcast, and we are told at the start of the film, don't spoil it. Like, we're given a warning. It's very clear.
Like one of our old-fashioned spoiler warnings that we used to do. Correct, then we got some feedback that that was irritating, so we stopped doing that. But it was like that.
I think the feedback that was from me actually. I hated it.
It was all of us. It was all of us deep down. Yeah.
I went in high spirits, slightly wary of my Marvel fatigue. I will say this: it's not a film that necessarily bypassed Marvel fatigue for me. It still suffered from it. Mm. That said, it was a lot of fun. It felt a little bit more of a throwback to maybe Marvel films of kind of 15 years ago, rather than just in terms of the style of it, rather than a very current Marvel film, which I kind of liked. I kind of liked that vibe. It is funny. It's not as funny as, say, Thor Ragnarok, but it is funny. I have a few issues with some of the decisions that characters make. You know, I said that to you at the time. I was like, I'm just not sure that it quite makes sense, the choices that they're making here. And so it's a bit flawed. It isn't groundbreaking in my opinion. But it was good fun. I am therefore not giving it maximum reviews, but I am giving it 4 blueberries out of 5 blueberries.
What a depressing start to this podcast. Unbelievable.
What do you mean, 4 bloobs?
He's giving it 4 blueberries. People are coming here for some hype. They're coming here for, you know.
Bring the hype.
I'm bringing it. I'm bringing it now, okay? So thank you for those spoiler-free thoughts, Gareth. Look, we talked about Marvel fatigue, blah, blah, blah. John's sick of it. Gaz, very sick of it. I am so sick of it to the point where I still watch things, but I'm not, like, for example, I'm not watching Hawkeye at the moment. You know what I mean? That's on Disney Plus. Got no interest at the moment. I've heard good things, though, so maybe retrospectively I'll go give it a look. But I told people in previous podcasts, especially with Eternals, I said, save yourself for the big ones.
Yeah.
Save yourself for this, your Thor Love and Thunder, and your Multiverse of Madness, okay? And I have a funny feeling that none of those are going to disappoint after seeing something like this, because the Avengers and Marvel has to go in a very different direction now. And they sort of have been planting seeds with shows like Loki, which is fantastic, about the multiverse and, you know, all this stuff that goes on. And that is how you improve the scope, you know, by taking something like our universe and then magnifying it by infinity, so there's so many possible outcomes, and it's huge, you know, the scope of it. And I know what you're thinking. Well, how can it do that and still have a heart? Well, it bloody does, and they've done a fantastic job.
It does have heart. It does have heart. I wouldn't argue against
it.
It
has so much heart. Yeah, we reviewed Marvel's Eternals, right? And you've probably all listened to that review. Look, we said
no heart.
We said it was fine, but it had no heart. Right, the whole film lacked. I mean, the humor. They tried. They tried with the humor. You know, with Kingo's character, they tried with him. Oh, yeah. You know, and then he just fucked off for half the film. Spoiler warning.
so bizarre.
Still bizarre. But this film has so much heart and soul that it makes that film. You know, if I could review that film retrospectively, Gareth, after seeing something like this, and I know it shouldn't really affect it, but you know, if I'd seen them back to back, I'd have been like, Jesus, that other one was terrible compared to this.
the other one, don't even name it.
Don't even name it. Tom Holland's, like, his interpretation and portrayal of Spider-Man is actually the best, I think, there has been. And what's lovely about that in this film is you get to see that, but you also get to see, and this isn't a spoiler because it's in the trailers, some elements of previous Spider-Man films. You know, I grew up with Spider-Man being one of the most important films of my childhood, like in terms of superhero films. You know, when I think back to superhero films that really, you know, captured my imagination, there's the original Batman, you know, with Michael Keaton. And then I'm thinking about Spider-Man 2. Which for me is still one of the best superhero films ever made, and definitely paved the way for a lot of the movies that we see today. I loved, like, Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin. I loved Doc Ock. And, you know, this isn't a spoiler because you've seen, you know, trailer-wise, you know, you might see a cameo from them.
I can just see you, like, watching you on a tightrope is hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think what they've achieved here is very, very special. The main characters and their relationships to each other, like, are central to this whole narrative in more ways than one. And they've been through so much together. And even something like Doctor Strange and Peter's relationship, it gets explored a bit further here. You know, it's quite a weird relationship because, obviously, you know, Peter's lost Tony and now he needs someone to lean on, another senior figure. And Doctor Strange is that figure. And, you know, they saved half the universe together. It's quite a weird dynamic they have. But, like, it's amazing to see that relationship a bit more. I can't really say much more in a spoiler-free context. And it's very difficult because we're just going to have to dive into it. So, you know, I'm just going to say right now that last week, me and Gareth went to see Dune, right? Finally, released here in Australia on an IMAX. Amazing experience. Absolutely amazing experience.
Five Blueberry film.
Definitely a Five Blueberry film. We can now, maximum reviews, we can safely say that. And you said to me, walking out the cinema, you said, is that your film of the year? And I said, yeah, I think it is. Like, Dune is absolutely mesmerizing. Visually, one of the most crazy, stunning things I've seen. Costume design, scope, scale. Definitely my soundtrack. Sort of film. Soundtrack. Bizarre science fiction. Absolutely up my alley, 100%. But, like, this film for me, the enjoyment I got out of this film, like, it was like being a child again, seeing some things in this film. And for me, just as an experience, obviously watching Dune is a completely different experience. Beautiful. Completely took me to another world. Okay. But this took me to my childhood. It brought a nostalgia.
To another universe.
Yeah. Nostalgia is something so potent that it will completely derail your senses. And it did. And I just thoroughly enjoyed this film. I think it's up there for me in the top three Marvel films ever made. God, it's actually getting quite hot. There's some really good ones up there. Pure joy. It's five bloobs, maximum reviews, semicolon, five blueberries. That is my score. Let it be known. Yeah, no, it is a big score. I mean, look, it's difficult. We could talk about ranking Marvel movies all day long, but I think for me, Infinity War and Endgame, which I see as a one piece sort of thing.
But it's two films.
It is two films, but I would say, okay, Infinity War was above it because the emotion I had after watching the ending of that, oh my God.
Yeah.
In the cinema, that was incredible. And I just love so many elements of that film. I love Captain America Winter Soldier. I still think it's an absolute classic. And obviously Guardians is up there as well. But for me, this has way more heart in it, and I think that's really important.
More heart than Guardians,
definitely, 100%. I think some of the stuff in this is some of the strongest character relationships that Marvel has done for a very long time, and I think everyone buys into it, and that's why I think it's doing so well, and you don't see much hate for it because these characters are so lovable and they love each other, and I think that really shines in this film. But anyway, enough about that. Let's get into some spoilers because we can't talk about it properly until we get into those juicy, juicy spoilers. But firstly, a little advert. Just want to say, we've got some new Patreons, Gareth. Sound the Patreon klaxon. Welcome to the club.
Mine was more like a hurricane warning than a Patreon siren.
True. We'll work on that. Thanks to Erin Jennings. Thank you for joining the Patreon club. I know we've had some email discussions and saying about how you loved our Watchmen coverage, Gareth, when we used to say the guilty. It's a reference to the Watchmen show that we used to do. When John's back, I promise we will get everyone to say it. And do the sketch again. So thank you for your support. It means a lot. And Jess Renero returning to the Patreon club. Thank you. Thank you for coming back. Absolute pleasure to have you back. And your support has been fantastic before, and it's going to be fantastic again. So thank you so much. And if you guys
superstars
out there want to join Erin and Jessica in supporting us, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/fancritical. On there, you can, you know, subscribe and help us create new shows.
Now, I know the old saying in like business and life, I suppose, is under promise, over deliver.
Correct.
So I hope that I'm not over promising here, but I just wanted to say Patreon, there's going to be more stuff coming your way soon. Just keep an eye out. I'm going to keep that vague, but there's some stuff coming.
It's vague. It's very vague.
It's vague, but fair, right? There's
vague but fair. Stuff is happening. Stuff is brewing. Hold your hats and the Patreon klaxon horn thing. Other than that, Gareth, I thought I'd just say that this is probably our last podcast before the new year. So we're going to take some time off, 2 weeks or so, and, you know, digest, eat, be with family, try and get over this pandemic as best we can. And we want you to do the same. Have a lovely break. And, you know, don't miss us too much. I know you will. So, you know, when you want to just escape the family at some point, you're going to go, oh, I want to go listen to my fan Critical Mates for a minute. Well, don't worry. We've got a huge back catalogue. So go check that out. Yeah. I'm sure you haven't listened to every single episode. Fan Critical.
Not possible. See some
all apps. Go check them out. So yeah, happy Christmas, everybody. And it's not the end of the podcast. Don't worry. We're going to get into spoilers now. But I just wanted to say that before we forgot, because, you know, it's that time of year, you know?
Happy holidays for, you know, anyone.
Holidays, anyone who might
not celebrate Christmas.
Very true. Happy holidays. That's a better way of saying it, Gareth. Good point. Right. And I'll tell you what podcast we're coming back with at the end of this podcast to keep you really excited, because that's going to be a fucking great one. Okay. Main spoilers. Let's go. We pick up with this film, Gareth, with Quentin Beck, a.k.a. Mysterio. He's framed Peter Parker for his murder and reveals his identity as Spider-Man. Okay, so, you know, this is a direct pickup from the end of Far From Home. And this is great stuff, because it really shows you how Peter's life would, you know, does get thrown into complete disarray when he becomes, quote unquote, the most famous person on the planet, which is fair enough. Like, you know, since Iron Man died, Peter Parker is being built up as a potential Avengers leader. You know, Spider-Man is being built up as the next Iron Man in a way. And that was definitely prevalent in the previous film. Now, to have his identity revealed like this, it's damaging to him and everyone he cares about, right?
It is. I found this sort of sequence a little bit cheesy.
Oh, really?
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think maybe it's just the nature of what it was that they're trying to do, but it felt like there was a lot of shit acting happening in it, because there were so many people that had to pretend to be like fawning over him and or like booing him because they think that he's killed Mysterio. And it was a little bit
background acting. It's a lot of his background acting.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's like in those old episodes of Friends when, you know, like an extra gets a line or two.
I know. Like, yeah, it stands out. It stands out because you're just like, what's going on? Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, I thought the sort of quickness of this whole sequence, I went on for like 10 minutes going, you know, him being potentially prosecuted. Fucking hell. His lawyer is fucking Daredevil. That was amazing. Like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Huge spoiler straight off the bat there. Daredevil coming back to the MCU. Jesus Christ.
Catches a brick.
Yeah. And he's like, how'd you do that? He said, I'm a very good lawyer. Damn straight you are, son. I'm very excited.
That's a good line.
It was very good. What an amazing thing to happen like 10 minutes into the film. I was like, Jesus. I want to touch on the identity reveal situation comic-wise, because I think that's interesting. So in the comics, Peter does reveal his identity. He's actually in the Civil War storyline on Iron Man's side, and to do so, he reveals his identity. So he massively regrets it. Like, it causes so many problems when he eventually backs away from the Civil War situation. Eventually, Iron Man, Doctor Strange, and Mr. Fantastic find a way, a sciencey way, of wiping everyone's mind without like an amnesia sort of thing.
Convenient.
Also, very accurate to what happens here, because Peter, in his, you know, malaise and his hates his new life, where he can't really do his vigilante Avengers thing in private, he turns to the Sanctum Sanctorum and Stephen Strange. And he goes there asking about the Eye of Agamotto, the Time Stone. Obviously, Doctor Strange no longer has the Time Stone because they were all put back into their place by Captain America at the end of Endgame. And but they do say there is this really easy spell that makes people forget things. So we can make everyone forget that your name is Peter Parker.
See,
however, I'll stop you there,
okay,
Gareth.
Go on.
However, as he's casting the spell, Peter realizes that everyone, including MJ, Ned, Happy, Aunt May, even Doctor Strange himself, and all the other Avengers would forget who Peter Parker is, which would, in turn, lead to all of the emotional growth that he's had over the past few films disappear, and he would be left completely isolated and alone. So he tries to, you know, manipulate the spell while on the fly to accommodate these people, and it all goes to shit.
Yeah. So, all right, I suppose this is a good example of what I'm talking about when I say some of the motivations just seem to, like, a little bit tenuous. Like, if you're going to do this spell for Peter Parker, first of all, Doctor Strange doesn't seem to me the type that would just do this spell because let's be fair, the reason that Peter Parker wants it to happen is that he hasn't got into MIT. Him and his mates haven't got into MIT because people know who he is.
Yep.
I don't think Doctor Strange, in all of his infinite wisdom, is going to be like, well, do you know what? It's worth risking fucking this up and playing around with some dangerous stuff so that you can get into the number one college. Like, come on.
They kind of say, though, that, oh, we did it that time with that party. We wanted everyone to forget. They try and make it off like it's a simple spell. Also, Doctor Strange kind of feels a bit of maybe pity on Peter. He's lost, like, Iron Man, you know. As I said, they have this relationship. And he is also Mr. Fix-It. He is quite arrogant in a way, Doctor Strange. Like, that is one of his things. He always thinks he can fix everything, which is what drove him to become the Sorcerer Supreme, because he's got an insane level of detail and refuses to give up. So it's quite interesting. There are elements in there, but I do agree.
But then
I didn't realize how wrong it could go.
But, well, and if you've decided, all right, it's worth it, wouldn't you just sit down for a second and be like, right, what exactly is it that you want?
Yeah,
because
maybe plan it.
Obviously, Doctor Strange doesn't want everybody to... knows that Peter Parker doesn't want everyone to forget who he is. Why don't you start doing this spell without checking who he wants to know who he is? Ludicrous.
Okay, that's fair. They maybe should have had a little 5-minute brainstorm and figured out the spell.
Just take some notes. Take some notes, honestly.
Write it down.
A little
and then,
whiteboard.
Then cast it. That goes horribly wrong. And basically, then Doctor Strange is like, why haven't you just even gone to try and convince the MIT people that, you know, let us in? Peter goes to track down this woman in a car on a traffic jam.
Oh, sorry, just quickly, just to clarify there. Obviously, it goes horribly wrong, but Doctor Strange does manage to contain the spell. So
contain
it's not going to do
any
damage.
Or does he? Ooh.
Ooh.
he finds this woman on the bridge, and before you know it, bloody Otto Octavius, Dr. Rock appears from Spider-Man 2, looking as great as ever. It's unbelievable, some of the, you know, work done on this man. He looks the same as in Spider-Man 2 here.
He hasn't aged. He hasn't aged.
Hasn't aged a day.
Did he just look way too old?
I rewatched Spider-Man 2 like about 3 months ago, and he looks the same. The same.
Actually,
mate.
When
it's
did
crazy.
That come out? That might be like 20 years old now.
Oh, it's like 20 years or something, bro. It's crazy. It's like 2003, maybe. Yeah, bizarre. Anyway, so he turns up and you're like, this is awesome. They have a great fight on the bridge, you know, because these are iconic. This is an iconic Spider-Man villain that we just sort of seen in this canon. And then basically.
The cinema erupted in cheers.
Which is great. And we'll get on to that. We'll get on to that later, Gareth. Remember that. Cinema erupted in cheers. In America, that is not a big deal. In places like Australia and the UK, huge deal. Doesn't happen. I've been to the cinema in the movies in America quite a lot for things like Rogue One. I've actually seen a couple of Star Wars premieres there. And the audience is electric. like to the point of everything is getting cheered. It's actually really fun atmosphere to be in. You feel like you're part of something quite special. And to have that, those moments, those rare films that transcend it in other countries where that, they have that same sort of vibe and energy. I knew this was a special film when I heard that sort of stuff. And other people have mentioned to me as well that their auditoriums also were kicking off a bit, which is great. I mean, just goes to show how infectious some of these classic characters are. So Doc Ock appears, they fight. Spider-Man eventually gets the best of him by using his nanotech to control the arms. And then Green Goblin appears out of nowhere. And you're like, fucking hell, this is amazing.
Yeah, I did at this point, I thought, is this just going to be some sort of procession on the bridge? Yeah. Like, well, just all of the old characters come running down the bridge.
Yeah, but it did feel that way. Anyway, then Doctor Strange intervenes, teleports Peter to the Sanctorum place. I can never say it. And essentially says, look, okay, what's happened here is I fucked up the spell because of you. And now everyone who knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man from every different multiverse is coming into this dimension. I need you to go out there, capture them, shoot them with this thing, which teleports them into a cell here, and then I can send them back to their universe. So Peter's like, oh, do I really have to do this? Is this a problem? He's like, yeah, definitely a problem. And then he gets the Brain Trust involved, which involves MJ and Ned, who are two great characters. And I love their relationship as a triumvirate, like a best friend and a sort of romantic interest. But they both have sort of
triumvirate.
Yeah, some useful skills for Peter to harness as well. So I love that dynamic, and getting them involved just makes it a whole lot more. I don't know. It gives it that heart that we're talking about. You know, that character, those character beats and relationships that we really care about.
Ned and is sort of, he's the hype man, isn't he? He's like, he loves you.
It. Yeah, he loves
in
it.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, he's like completely loving everything. Like when he walks in.
MJ's the cynical one. So that's,
she's
that's
super
John.
Cynical. Yeah, yeah.
Which I guess means I'm Peter Parker.
Well, definitely fine. Not. Makes sense. Definitely not. You are bug-like in a way. You're like a bug. don't know which one.
Wow.
Anyway, so they're on it. Their job is to hunt down what I thought was turning into the Sinister Six, because they go on this escapade to hunt down Green Goblin, but then they bump into Jamie Foxx's Electro, right?
This is a cool scene.
With the electricity, yeah, very cool. And then you've also got Sandman, right? So
less cool, but
less cool, but easily one of the least cool possibilities. And they've already captured Lizard, okay, from Amazing Spider-Man. And Electro is from Amazing Spider-Man 2, which has its faults. You know, let's not all imagine that it's an amazing film. It's okay, but just to have these guys back is kind of crazy. Jamie Foxx as well, that's a big deal. Like, you know, he's a very popular guy these days. So they have that sequence.
It's all the girls.
Yeah, cool guy. So they capture all these villains, and they sort of, you know, Doctor Strange says, yep, I'm going to send them back. But then they sort of all have these conversations with each other, which are quite funny because these villains have never really interacted, also from different universes, apart from, well, Lizard and Max are from the same universe, and Doc Ock, Sandman, and Defoe's Green Goblin are from the same universe. By the way, Green Goblin at this point has shed his bipolar skin and is just now Norman Osborn, who is a weak, frail old man looking for advice, which makes him much more empathetic than he's ever been. You know what I mean? Like, you're seeing him very vulnerable, which you do see in the original Spider-Man, but there's something about him here where you really pity him in a way, like you want to help him. Like, do you know what I mean? You feel sorry for him.
Well, yeah, he's an old, confused man who's wandered into a different universe. That would be confusing for most
people. To be fair, that would confuse most. It's not because he's old, but he has also got a serious condition where he turns into a raving lunatic who wants to kill everyone.
Also confusing.
Also very confusing. So Peter's actually formed a weird bond with Norman Osborn, which is bizarre, canonically bizarre. Then what happens is he finds out that Osborn's actually dead in his universe, and Doc Ock also dies, and they all die. All these characters die at the hands of Spider-Man, fighting Spider-Man, and he's like, whoa, 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 I can't send these guys back to die. We have to help them. Doctor Strange is like, nah, kid, fucking just send them back. We can't be having this bollocks. You've got me in enough trouble as far as it is. Wong's coming back. He's going to go mental. Yeah?
He's
who made Wong Sorcerer Supreme? Mental. Anyway.
Sand all over the living room. Like, this is nonsense.
Clean it up. God. And basically what happens is he snatches the box that's going to send them all home. And basically has a fight with Doctor Strange in the Mirror Universe. Now, Gareth, you haven't seen the Mirror Universe before. Because you missed out on Doctor Strange, is his own film. What do you think about the Mirror Universe?
I loved the Mirror Universe, and I loved the Mirror Universe so much that I watched Doctor Strange yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, I want to see more Mirror Universe.
Spoiler warning. No, joking. This is fine.
this was a really cool scene. I loved it. This was probably my scene of the film. And I said to you afterwards, I said, does Doctor Strange like have a lot of the old mirror universe?
I said, yes, lots of it.
You did say yes. It had less than I had hoped, but...
Yeah, but he has other stuff they have to go through, like out-of-body experiences.
Like Kathmandu.
There's that cool sequence in Doctor Strange where he gets put within, like, just an infinite sort of universe, and all that weird visual shit that goes on. You know what I mean? Like, where she tries to show him everything. Fuck me.
Yeah. Remind me of that Simpsons episode, actually, where Homer has that chili.
Or the Rick and Morty episode where they time jump and they all whirl together and they go through that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, same. Anyway.
But yeah, so I loved the mirror verse scene. That was good fun.
Yeah.
But also, just going back a step, Doctor Strange 100% is in the right here. Like, come on, mate.
Oh yeah, you gotta let fate decide itself in a way. And their fate has been decided. However, the more I see of Doctor Strange, I'm like, I really like Doctor Strange. Like, he's gone from like sort of someone I didn't really care about that much when his original film came out to now, after seeing him through the Infinity Saga and in this film and some What If stuff, I'm like, I'm totally in on Doctor Strange's character and his sort of realms of possibilities. And this is even more showcased here, I think, in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. I love
him. He's cool. I'm
with you on board the Doctor Strange hype train.
Yeah, Doctor Strange train. He uses several trains in the mirror sequence, which is quite fun.
Actually, yeah.
He actually gets stuck on that train because Peter, using the skills of geometry, outwits him, traps him in the mirrorverse, and then Julie goes to free the Sinister Five, as I'm calling them, and they all go to Happy Hogan's apartment and try and work on cures for each of them. And Peter successfully cures Doc Ock, and that's great because then you get to see the sweeter side of Otto Octavius, who is actually a lovely man. And then they all go about trying to cure each and every one of them. But you know what the problem with villains is, Gareth? Is that they're villainous, and they will fuck you over at some point. Not all the time, but sometimes. And what happened?
This isn't like, it's not a soundbite, is it? We can't put this on a little poster, motivational poster.
They will fuck you over at some point.
Sometimes, but
not always. But basically, guess what? Norman Osborn's turned back into Green Goblin. Him and Electro.
Knew he would.
Oh, God damn it. Knew Willem Dafoe would totally do this. Also, Willem Dafoe interestingly said that he didn't want to just come back for a cameo. He wanted a big, chunky role, and I think he got it in this film. And boy, does he run with it. He essentially causes a fight with Spider-Man here and Electro and everyone, and they all piss off. And then Green Goblin is being proper Green Goblin here, like maniacal. And you really get a sense in this one of his like super strength as well. Like, he's fucking going toe to toe with Spider-Man here. And is visceral stuff. Like, it is choking, fucking multiple beatdowns in the face, like just
smashing him through floors and stuff.
Oh, it's great. This was awesome. This whole scene was awesome. And it completely ramps up to the point where you have what I think is an unbelievable set of scenes. Which, to be fair, even though I have seen this scene so many times throughout comic book history, maybe with different characters, or in film history, it still took me by complete surprise to see the death of Aunt May here.
You teared up, didn't you?
This was just brutal. I just was like, oh, Jesus. And the thing is, I really like Aunt May. I like this depiction of Peter and her's relationship. It's a lot more sort of young. It's a lot more sort of fun. Like, she's a lot more, she's very supportive of his, you know, superhero stuff. And you know, actively wants him to do the right thing. It's her that encourages him to do the right thing here and try and save these villains. But Green Goblin fucking kills her. And that whole scene, I thought the acting was phenomenal from Tom Holland and Aunt May. And we get the famous line, which we have been waiting for three films now, the famous Spider-Man line: with great power comes great responsibility. Famously uttered by Uncle Ben.
And they say it a couple more times throughout the film. It's like, yeah, come on.
You've hammering it home. But yeah, it is nice to see that this line transcends the multiverse. Like, this is him. You know, this is the essence. This is his drive that he's always had, Peter Parker's drive. And Aunt May dies here.
Yeah,
and
she does. They say dying. Those are her dying words, aren't they?
Pretty much, yeah. Man, what did you think about this? Did it catch you by surprise? It caught me by complete surprise. I could not see this happening in this film. Because I think he's been through a lot. I think he's been through so much, this Peter Parker. Like, the other Peter Parkers haven't been fucking vanished in the blip and haven't fought Thanos to save the universe. They've fought fucking Rhino, and they fought fucking, you know, Electro. They've not fought Thanos, you know what I mean, to save the universe. So I think this Peter Parker's been through a lot. So I didn't think he was going to have to suffer anymore.
No, the film up to this point as well, it didn't really fit tonally, did it? Like, you didn't.
No.
Which I'm saying as a good thing, really. Like, for it to hit you
around the face,
right in the face, because you're unguarded. You don't have your guard up. So yeah, I was taken by surprise for sure. I also love that you. You praised the acting in this scene from both Tom Holland and Aunt May.
played by Aunt May.
What a coincidence. Yeah. They weren't going to call her that. And then they were like, bloody hell, we've got
an actor called this Aunt May. Yeah.
Marissa Tomei.
That's correct.
You're right. I'm a big fan of this younger Aunt May as well. I think that... that works. We don't need the old sage in this film, because that comes, I suppose, in the form of Doctor Strange, and that kind of, you know, wisdom. And although she's delivering her own form of wisdom too, actually.
Yeah, and she says it in a way that's kind of, when the way she was talking, when you kind of think she's all right, I was like, she's speaking really weird here. Like, frantically. Yeah. And I was like, I think she's dead. I think she's like totally dying here. And then I was like, oh, maybe she's not dying, because she said great power comes great responsibility. And then she just fucking keels over. And I was just like, oh, God, that really caught me off guard. She was talking bizarrely, and it was really well done, because it's kind of how you imagine people in. It's like when you watch films like 1917 and these other war films, when they get shot and stuff, sometimes I just forget what's happened to them. It's very powerful. It's very powerful stuff. There's actually a scene that follows this where, you know, the rain is falling down on Peter's face, where he's lit up by a screen with Jonah Jameson, the reporter, saying about how he's killed Aunt May or something, or it's his fault that this woman's dead. It looked so Blade Runner 2049. I was just like, this is amazing cinematography. It looked brilliant. I mean, it was depressing. Very depressing, but that the poignancy of that scene was really cool. Did you get those sort of those vibes, those cinematographer vibes?
Do you know what's his name again? Sorry, the reporter.
Denny. Oh, Jonah Jameson.
Jonah Jameson. Yeah. J. Jonah Jameson, isn't it?
J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you're saying now. When I think back and visually, you're probably right, but he's too over the top.
Yeah, he always is.
Very,
though.
Very comic book, very comic book-esque, and so like I'm not going to complain too much about that. But that's probably why I didn't immediately make that connection, because you know everything in Blade Runner is sort of slightly very removed from any sort of personality, whereas this is a really bombastic like reporter in your face, like it was a very different tone. But yes, visually thinking about it, you're right, that did have Denis Villeneuve vibes.
Yeah, and definitely just want to say that you know, what's his face, the actor Gareth Whiplash, what's his name? I've had a mind.
Initials. He's just got initials.
Yeah, Initial Man. He is in the old Spider-Man film as well, like the Tobey Maguire version. That is, he plays the same character. So it's great to have him back.
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons, Initial Man. The Initial Man. That's his superpower.
And he's a brilliant actor as well.
Oh, unbelievable. Brilliant actor. Oscar winning, obviously.
Not so criticizing him.
Yeah, let's not have a go at him. So Peter's at his lowest ebb here, lost Aunt May. He's got that drive now that he's always needed, apparently. Spider-Man has always needed to lose loved ones around him and hear those famous lines. Ned tries to discover where Peter is and has a sling ring, which Peter stole from Doctor Strange. That's the portal ring. It allows them to teleport anywhere. And he says, take me to Peter. And then they did the portal, and you see a silhouette of Spider-Man. And I was like, all right, that's Andrew Garfield. Straight away, I turned to you and said, that's Andrew Garfield. He comes through, cinema erupts, cheers, of course. And you forget how fucking good Andrew Garfield was as Peter Parker. He's really good. He's really funny. Like, he's cheeky.
I've always said that.
He's got wisecracks to him. He's great. And then you're like, okay, take me to Peter Parker. And then he opens it up and some guy comes in just dressed in clothes, nothing, no suit or anything. And it's fucking Tobey Maguire. Cinema erupts, obviously, once again. Great moments. And just to see these two together was beautiful. And then to see them with Tom Holland's Peter Parker as well. I was worried about the... Because look, when we knew this was multiverse, and there's a part of me that kind of wishes that they hadn't given away as much as they had about the film. Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire, for about 2 years now, have literally done about 5 or 6 interviews each where they've had to say, look, I'm not in this film. And they've just lied. They've blatantly lied. And that's great. I love that. Like, it's like when Game of Thrones,
now
spoilers.
I'll never believe either of them.
Yeah, who cares?
No matter what they say.
Their careers are finished. This is the biggest thing they'll do now. No, I'm joking. Andrew Garfield's still got some legs in him. But no, too many.
Playing for Germany,
Spider
up front.
Yeah, Thomas Müller.
Look like him. It's mental.
He does. But I was worried because they gave away a bit too much about the multiverse. Obviously, they didn't say these characters are in it, but we all expected them to be in it, especially when you see Doc Ock, Green Goblin. And I was worried about the banter. Did you think the banter between all three of them worked? Because I thought it was glorious.
I thought it was really good. And that's, you know, I'm probably coming at it from a Spider-Man skeptic perspective as well. Like, I didn't love those Tobey Maguire films back in the day. The Andrew Garfield ones kind of just sort of passed me by a bit. And like I liked him, but yeah, the films, can't remember them. And yeah, so I don't know, maybe that worked in its favor from my perspective, because I didn't hold anything too dear to my heart. So it was just, you know, three good actors, and they are all good actors. Like, no matter what people say about Tobey Maguire, he's a good actor. Just three good actors playing like
three guys hanging out,
just three guys messing around. And it was good stuff. It was funny.
Like me, you, and John on a Friday night, just having a good time.
Yeah, exactly. That is what it was. Except yeah. We've all got the same name, which is hilarious.
But we're all Minutemen. No, we're all superheroes in a way.
They were good. They were good. Andrew Garfield was primarily the comic relief of the three. I suppose that's to be expected, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I liked the way. And this was good. Little. You know, tidbit for any comic fans out there. It's always been a massive point of contention, the fact that Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man can biologically create webs.
Oh, yeah.
Because yeah. I think yeah. it's just not how it happens. Every Peter Parker that I could think of creates web shooters. And it's always been a point of contention, like, you know, for really geeky fans who are just like, that's ridiculous. He can't do that. And they make fucking so much fun of it in this film that he has biological web shooters. And I was like, yes, this is hilarious. Have you ever had a web block? Yeah. Does it come out of anywhere else? No.
No.
What's that stuff down there then? Anyway, don't worry about that. It's just good. It's just good. It's great banter. And the writing, I kind of feel like they just really vibed off each other quite well. There's probably a bit of improv in there sometimes. I don't know. It just felt good. It felt funny.
It did. And like comparison of sort of who they fought, like you touched upon it earlier. Like
yeah.
Tom Holland, Spider-Man, he's going Save about Thanos and an alien, purple alien. And then Andrew Garfield's like, oh yeah, I fought a rhinoceros machine.
Russian in a rhinoceros Russian machine. And Tobey Maguire's like, I fought this alien that was made out of black goo. It's like, okay, so you fought Venom, obviously. And it's just like, I fought an alien too. I went to space. He was purple. I was like, yeah, this is good. This is good stuff. And it makes you realize how... And he's also like, oh, there's no other Avengers around. They're like, who's the Avengers?
Yeah.
Because in their universe, there's no Avengers. It's great. I love it. I love it. I loved all of that. It was great. And it makes their films not seem pointless now. It makes their films feel... like relevant, and I don't know, just like they lived in their own time and space. And I love that.
Yeah.
So they basically come up with a plan. The big finale of the film is them to cure all of these villains, including Green Goblin, who Peter actually despises now and wants to kill because he killed Aunt May, which is a fair enough reaction, to be honest with you. So they all go about their business. They cure all of the villains, but unfortunately Doctor Strange has now returned, by the way. They kill the villains. Peter actually goes to kill Green Goblin, but is stopped by Tobey Maguire, who then gets stabbed by Green Goblin. And I was like sitting there going, fucking
Green
hell.
Goblin.
The Green Goblin.
The Green Goblin wheeled him.
He quilled him, he did. Yeah, sorry about that. I've had a seltzer, it's gone to my head. Yeah, passion fruit seltzer, lovely, lovely drop. And I was like, oh shit, they've killed Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
Yeah.
And then
I
was like...
It would have been heavy, but it would have made sense.
Like... Yeah, but then what about MJ back home? I was like, you can't leave MJ alone. Jesus Christ. Anyway, he's fine, guys.
Take deals.
He said he's going to be all right. He gets stabbed all the time, apparently, so that's great. Not that you get stabbed, but just great that you can heal like a spider. Do they heal? Maybe. Some might. Don't know. There's lots of types of spiders out there, Gareth.
You're thinking of lizards
and slugs and things. Yeah.
Can I just say with this scene at the end, where the fight is on the Statue of Liberty and
with Cap Shield. Being added
being
to the
installed.
Statue of
Liberty. Like, it's mid-installation, isn't it?
Great.
It
hasn't, that's great.
Yeah, I do like that. But there's a point, like, they start the fight, and it's like, oh, it's not going very well. And then they just, the three of them, the three Spider-Mans,
yeah,
just, like, stop and have a little team talk in the middle of
it. That's when the Avengers line comes up. They're like, you've not worked in a team before? He's like, no. And everyone's like, no. He's like, right, well, I have... Just trust your Peter Tingle and follow my lead.
Right.
It's good.
But, I mean, it's the dialogue's fine, sort of. But why have the bad guys let them just have this little
It's a
pit
comic
stop?
Book film. Let it go.
Well, oh, come on, mate. You can't have... You can't let... No, the standards have been set. We expect more from our comic book films these days.
Okay. If you say so.
Yeah, we do.
So Doctor Strange, Green Goblin now cured. Peter stopped from killing him. Doctor Strange is now struggling to contain the infinite possibilities of villains that will come through who know who Peter Parker is. They're all coming through. It looks amazing, actually. The cracking of reality around the Statue of Liberty. Very cool. Very good reference to
the New York skyline. It looks awesome. Yes.
Very good reference to the What If Marvel series on Disney Plus, which I'll talk about later. And he says the only way to fix this is to do the spell where everyone forgets who Peter Parker is. Wow. So we've got back to square one where we were at the start of the film. He does the spell, but Peter goes down and talks to Ned. He talks to MJ and he says, look, I don't want you guys to forget me. I'm going to find you. And they're obviously devastated because they don't want to forget him. You know, especially MJ. She loves him. Sure, Ned loves him in his own little way, fanboy way. And I'm going to come find you. I'm going to tell you everything. And they said, you better find me. Cast a spell. Everyone forgets who Peter Parker is. Spider-Man's true identity is survived. And essentially now no one knows who Peter Parker is, to the point where they don't even know he exists. It's not like they don't know who he is. It's just he doesn't exist to them. Like he has to meet them all for the first time, blah, blah, blah. You know, Peter later visits MJ and Ned to reintroduce himself, but decides against it. Because he sees that their life might be better off without him, and he doesn't want to endanger them like he did Aunt May. Which I thought, and I'm just going to say this right now, this is a very depressing ending to what has been a very fun film, apart from obviously the Aunt May death.
I thought this was an excellent ending. I thought it was a really good ending, because I love that it went down that route rather than having to have everything tied up in a neat bow, and you know, a situation where the superhero can have their cake and eat it too. Like sometimes there's a sacrifice to be paid. Like if
he knows that
to
Jesus.
Be that superhero, and you want to you if you want to be Spider-Man, there are you're going to have to deal with the consequences. And I think that, like, in a way, the way that the sort of action sequence took place afterwards and the soundtrack, there was optimism within that, you know?
Like,
he's lost that, and that's really sad, but that doesn't mean that he can't have a fulfilling time being Spider-Man. Like, he's having a great time stopping all the crimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard for him because he's lost everyone. He has no one now. Like, you know, he's lost Aunt May, he's lost his relationship with MJ, Ned, his closest confidants, Happy. So for me, it's a very depressing note. Look, I applaud it in its boldness, because it is bold to have Spider-Man, who has been built up over, I think, six films now, if you include Civil War, the Infinity Saga, and his own films. He's been built up as the next leader of the Avengers, to the point where the whole point of Far From Home was Tony trusts you. All the Avengers will be looking to you at some point. You're the smartest kid. You're the what, maybe one of the strongest heroes. You were going to be the leader of the Avengers. They've been setting that up for five films, and they've just completely gone, nope, see ya.
No.
That's
but,
gone.
You know, but what's annoying is they'll find a way. They will
find a way.
Like, oh, there's a that's spare what I was time gonna, crystal.
There, well, that's what I was going to ask you. Will some of them get their memories back? And to dovetail that is... this is the end of the high school trilogy. Now, this is the early formation of Peter Parker as a superhero, which is quite an interesting phase of his life. You know, the Tobey Maguire version, obviously, is supposed to be young. But the ones we see, like Into the Spider-Verse, we see an older Peter Parker, a 27-year-old, a 30-year-old Peter Parker, who has been fighting crime, even in the Spider-Man games, same thing, who has been fighting crime.
Pig version.
Spider-Pig, who's
Peter
been...
Porker.
Peter Porker. Who's been fighting crime for like 15 years. So this is the new phase of that hero's life, where he's shed high school. This is him becoming Spider-Man, and he has a lot to learn. This also gives us the opportunity to, not get rid of Zendaya as MJ and Ned. They can definitely come back later, and I could definitely see them being introduced later. But you've got opportunities here for Gwen Stacy to come into the fray. You've got opportunities here for other villains. Kingpin, who definitely will be rising up in the turmoil of something like the Blip and the crime gangs, I'm sure, will be coming up like that. You've got these other villains who can come into play. So I think they're going to leave them for a bit, and I think they will come back to them. I definitely think the chemistry between MJ, Zendaya, and Tom Holland is too good to leave. So I could see there being a film or two break from it, and then it coming back, then them coming back. Also, there's a theory going around that Ned could end up being a villain, which is very interesting. It gets mentioned in this film Peter Parker fights his best friend, and that does happen in Tobey Maguire's one, where he fights Green Goblin Jr. or whatever, played by James Franco. It's going to be interesting to see who Ned could potentially turn into. Obviously nothing goblin related, but could be another villain. So that's interesting as a concept for him to come back into the fray at some point. Overall, lots of possibilities. Dour ending, but fuck me, great future ahead for the Spider-Man franchise. And I would happily see another three Spider-Man films.
Here's a theory for you. It's entirely dependent on the answers to this question. Is there a Spider-Man villain that has something to do with engineering?
Yeah, probably. I mean, look, there's a lot of villains. I need to think back to Sinister Six stuff.
Because MJ is like, hey, fellow engineer, because it's the...
Yeah, the, I think, yeah. And don't forget, Ned proves in this film that he does have magic within him. Like, he do you know how long it took Doctor Strange to use a sling ring? You watched the film. You saw how difficult it was for him to use it.
He had to be trapped in Mount Everest to get back.
Correct. Spoiler and Ned's just fucking doing it for fun. Strange. So there's some stuff there that I think is very interesting. Let's talk about overall fantastic film, obviously. And, you know, I'm going to go watch it again. I can't wait to go see it again. But very excited. So maximum reviews, remember. Let's talk about the mid-credit scene and let's talk about the end-credit scene. Mid-credit scene, very fun. Eddie Brock, played by Tom Hardy, who has just had his latest Venom film. I don't know if it's out here yet, Gareth, but I haven't seen it, so I can't talk much about Let There Be Carnage.
No.
Yeah, it's been delayed.
It's been advertised a lot.
Yes, Let There Be Carnage. And we find out that he's been transported to this universe as well. Obviously, this is pre the events of the end of the film. So he's talking to a guy at the bar and he's like, what? So you're telling me there was this purple alien that wiped out half the universe? I need to go speak to this Peter Parker. And then he vanishes because the spell happens and all the people go back. I loved it. And there's a little bit of black venom goo that gets left on the bar, which is obviously maybe the next step for this franchise.
Means it can't be Tom Holland, right?
No, it can.
Sorry, Tom. It can't be Tom Hardy playing Venom in this universe.
It can, maybe. It can. Look, here's the interesting thing. Sony own the rights to Spider-Man, but they gave them to Marvel for a limited time, and they keep paying them loads of money so they can still use Spider-Man in all these films, right? Because technically, Spider-Man belongs to Sony. Sony also own Venom. And they haven't given Venom to the Marvel Universe yet. But maybe there's a deal being struck. Maybe there's something happening there because, you know, both films are very popular. Venom's actually done surprisingly well. I definitely foresee Spider-Man's next adversary or friend, who knows, being Eddie Brock and Venom, which is very interesting. I mean, that's a good way for Spider-Man to move. You know, we talked about Kingpin. Maybe he's a big bad. Maybe Venom comes into play. There's some fun things there. So I would totally buy into that film. And Eddie Brock in the first Venom film, played by Tom Hardy, is fun. It's a fun film. It's nothing groundbreaking, but it's fun. And I think if you were to pair them, I think it could be really good, personally.
Well, I think it could work. But surely the story is that Tom Hardy, the Tom Hardy version, was in that universe temporarily and now has gone back to his. So he's gone.
But what if there's Eddie Brock still exists in this Spider-Man's universe, but just hasn't found Venom yet. Maybe this Venom sludge goes and finds Eddie Brock. That they're a symbiote for a reason, you know, the Venom alien, because only works with certain humans, if you get what I mean. So
I'd love it if it was just that, like, Mexican barman.
Yeah, that's just there. Random Mexican barman. The next one I want to talk about is the end credit scene, which for the first time ever in my knowledge is a genuine trailer, which has not been released before. Usually I kind of think the end credit sequences are kind of non-important, like you could get away with not seeing them. They don't usually integrally matter to the story, but this one really did, because it was essentially a trailer for the Multiverse of Madness, which I've been harping on about for a while now on this podcast and saying how I'm excited for it, featuring Scarlet Witch.
Who I love.
Who you love. And she is brilliant. And Doctor Strange and their journey through the multiverse. And the big reveal at the end, evil Doctor Strange, which is amazing.
This looked really cool. This got me now hyped.
This is what I want to say to everyone right now. Now, there is a show called Marvel's What If, and it's on Disney Plus, right? And I've explained it in the 60 Minutes episodes before. It's amazing animation. So it's animated. So if you're not into your animated stuff, I get it. But there's some really cool story stuff. And it's basically Twilight Zone of Marvel. So there'll be scenarios that are thrown out there, which are like, this is how you remember the Marvel films. But in this alternate universe, it played out this way. And because of that, this happened. Okay. Episode 4, I think it is, of that series is about Doctor Strange. It is actually such a beautiful and depressing episode of television. The animation's fantastic. It's Benedict Cumberbatch doing the voice of Doctor Strange, so you've got all that back. And it's essentially about how he tries to save the love of his life. Because in this universe, she dies.
Christine.
And he uses the Time Stone to try and do this. And chaos ensues. And I won't say any more about it, but it does reveal that there are multiple versions of Doctor Strange who are the Sorcerer Supreme, who are the biggest threat to all of reality in the universe, potentially. And what the fuck do we get in this trailer is we see evil Doctor Strange, and they even say the line is, the biggest threat to the multiverse and all of reality is you, Stephen. It's amazing. It's great.
Shit line to be on the receiving end of, isn't it?
Yes, but that is kind of true. And the thing is, I didn't know how much this What If show would actually matter to the actual canon of MCU. And there have been multiple instances where things in those episodes have been referenced and are also going to affect future things.
Well, they can draw from it.
If you're
going to the multiverse route, then you can draw directly from it. Makes sense.
So what I would say is, if you haven't seen that and you love your Marvel canon, but you also want to have a good time, because some of these episodes are very fun, some of them are very silly, some of them see your favorite characters die, it's kind of cool. Go check it out, Marvel's What If on Disney Plus, and that will give you a better context about the multiverse, because it is multiverse related. It'll give you a context on, there's a really cool storyline with Ultron in there, which I don't want to spoil, but go check it out. Marvel's What If. And that's it. I'm buzzing for that Multiverse of Madness stuff, because that looks great. So I'm sure everyone who saw that end credit scene was like, you know what? Maybe Marvel isn't just done yet. Maybe they're putting things out that are still worthwhile. And they definitely are. Like, this is 100% a home run. Like, everyone I've spoken to, this is a home run. Every review I've read, this is a home run. Like, this pulled off something fantastic, multi-generational, just bag of fun mixed in with all your favorite comic beats, mixed in with Peter Parker finally getting his pathos, his drive from losing one of his parental figures. He's obviously lost Tony Stark, but now losing Aunt May. It's great. I mean, it's got everything you could want from the film. So go check it out.
Do you know what I mean about it having a bit of an early 2000s vibe? And I don't think that's just because of the characters.
That's fine, because it has to lean into that because of the older superheroes. Like, they can't, especially Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. But also, this is like seeing your favorite comic book rewritten by a different author. Like, it's just the same stuff packaged up differently, but packaged up in a most beautiful, imaginative, and collaborative way. And that's why it seems like something familiar, but also something very different. And I think the difference here is the heart, like I was talking about between the characters. You've still got those major story beats, but you're also drawing on that nostalgia from when we saw it as kids, and also drawing upon the thing that we care most about, really, which is the relationship between characters, especially MJ, Peter, Ned, even, you know, Aunt May, and the villains. You know, I think they did a great job humanizing the villains in this, which is fantastic. So I love the film. I can't wait to see what John and Atal think about it. But yeah, if you can let us know what you think, guys. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com over the Christmas break. If you haven't seen it yet, go see it. If you wanted to wait for this review, some people do that. Go check it out. Sorry for all the spoilers. And also, you know, go see it again, because I think this is a fantastic film that definitely needs to be viewed in the cinema.
If you're in Australia, Len needs somebody to go and see it again with, so
I'll see it with the missus next, mate.
I'm not going to.
She wants to see it. She wants to see it.
Does she?
Yeah. She loves Spider-Man. It's good, that.
Okay. Good. Well done, Mel.
She was annoyed that we went. But I said, look, it's for the podcast. Had to.
She's got to understand that.
Yeah, she understands. It's all good. But I'll go
I introduced the two of you. She can't get annoyed at anything.
Well, anyway, enough of that. Enough of historical critical. Anyway, thank you for listening to us. It's been a pleasure this year. We're returning, as I said, to more review type stuff, more TV type stuff, and original content next year. The next podcast we're going to do is a humdinger, Ghostbusters Afterlife in the new year. Get ready to check that out. That is going to be so much fun. I've heard great things, and you know how much we love the Ghostbusters here at Fan Critical. Okay, Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2. So don't even get started.
Have you seen Ghostbusters 2?
Ghostbusters 2.
Do you think it's underrated?
No. Yes. Massively underrated. So yes, that is the next one in the year. Have a lovely Christmas. Enjoy time with family. Gareth, I'd say the same to you, but I'm seeing you on Christmas Eve. So I'll wish that to you then. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a lovely break.
Thanks, guys. Have a lovely break. Happy Christmas. Enjoy Spider-Man. And I hope you loved our coverage this year. We'll be back in the new year with some more lovely coverage for you all. Thanks, guys.
With great coverage comes great
responsibility. Great responsibility. Yeah, I like that. It's good, that.
You're flying out into the darkness to fight ghosts.
What do you mean?
They all die fighting Spider-Man. It's their fate. I'm sorry, kid.
Yeah, me too.
Don't.
Look, there has to be another way.
There isn't. They're a danger to our universe.
You're not gonna take this away from me.
Peter, you're struggling to have everything you want while the world tries to make you choose.
It's all my fault. I can't save everyone.
What's happening?
They're starting to come through, and I can't stop them.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.